The lesson.
The lesson.
The lesson.
The newest.
The lesson. Hare Krishna. Anybody out there, if anyone's listening? So I think last time I did a Sunday feast was I was encouraging people to chant, and plant. And so I'm going to continue a little bit about this planting, but a little bit in a deeper aspect. In springtime, of course, we... my basin says, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Yeah, so maybe some of the people that were inspired made some gardens, planted some seeds, hoping that that there would be some fruit they could offer the Lord, that there would be flowers and vegetables, and to please the Lord. And so, of course, that takes a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of confidence to actually start a big project like that. But one becomes very inspired and anxious to give the results to the Supreme Lord in the end. That's our greatest joy. Our greatest joy is to see the Lord happy. And I know when I joined the movement, I was also very enthusiastic and very confident that I would reach the perfection of Krishna consciousness in no time. That actually, I could garden very quickly, and love for the Lord would bloom in my heart in no time. They told me the story about Katvanga Maharaj, who within a second was able to reach this perfection. I was thinking, wow, well, at least 2 weeks, I can manage that. I mean, it sounded easy. There's singing and there's chanting and eating, and then there's, you know, just that perfect round that probably isn't so difficult to do. And so I set out to do that kind of gardening. So then it's time to put your seedlings in the ground, and it's here in the Sunshine State. You have a couple times a year you can actually do this. But they don't tell you that not only is this the Sunshine State, but it's also the humidity state. So when you go outside, it might say 98 degrees, but the heat index will say 128 degrees, as it has been all last week, and I can swear by it because I've been out in it. And so then you get all excited, okay, I'm going to put these little seedlings in the ground, and you put your hands in there, the therapy of the soil and being close to Mother Nature and Earth, and then all of a sudden, you get red ants all over your hands, right? And so you're thinking, well, this is too much. But I can beat the heat. I can go out at night, and I'll do it when it's cool, right? So you go outside around 6 o'clock, and what happens? You're food for life. The mosquitoes come out. It's their dinner time, and you can't do anything. So and you think, oh, my gosh, this is crazy. How am I going to ever fulfill this mission of offering things to Krishna? And our hearts are also a fertile garden. They came from Krishna's wonderful garden, but something went wrong, and here we are now in this material world. And many obstacles are there. Kali Yuga, for one, makes it a little bit undesirable. And let's see, in text 36 of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks a little bit about this gardening, in an interesting way, in some of the obstacles. So in the 36th verse of the third chapter, Arjuna said, O descendant of Vishnu, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? A living entity as part and parcel of the Supreme is originally spiritual, pure, and free from all material contaminations. Therefore, by nature, he is not subject to the sins of the material world. But when he is in contact with the material nature, he acts in many sinful ways without hesitation, and sometimes even against his will. So yes, we want to garden our hearts. We want to grow so many nice love for the Lord in there. But we find caterpillars. Have you ever had caterpillars on your plants? Sometimes you have to like really yank to get them off. They're really stuck on there. So we have these simple activities, attachments to sensory gratification. They're like those caterpillars that we have to constantly try to rip off. So many attachments we have. And then there's also stink bugs. Here in Florida, we have stink bugs. All they do, you finally get some little tomato on your plant, and it starts to get red, and immediately the stink bugs know it's time to go in there and suck out all the juice. So you go to get your tomato and there's nothing in it because the stink bugs have sucked it all out. So these are also attachments. They're our relationships which sometimes drain us of that desire to really serve the Lord and to get out of this material world. So we have to be very careful of all these little critters in our gardens. And of course, Kali Yuga doesn't make it any easier. So it's not as easy as it's advertised, you know, chant and be happy. There are different impediments. But still we go on. And then it becomes summer, just like we just turned summer last week, the 21st, I think, something like that. And Krishna just turned up the heat a little bit. And so you go out in your garden, you've planted your plants, and you go out there and you see these big giant things, 8 feet tall in your garden. And what are they? Weeds. And you look down and you try to find what you planted. I went out here, one gentleman from North Carolina didn't know much about summer in Florida. So he planted mung beans. And first of all, the deer came and ate half of them. And then, looking for them, I had to pull away the weeds. We're barely into summer, and finally I see a few down there. So they grow very quickly here. Sometimes you think, oh gosh, they go all the way to China or something, the roots. There's a bird that takes little berries from a thorn tree and he poops out the seeds. And so in one of our permaculture swales, I was in there trying to weed, and there's these thorn trees now growing everywhere. So Johnny Ty and I started to pull on the roots. And these roots, keep pulling and pulling, 8 feet, 10 feet, 15 feet long, and then it comes to another tree. And so this is what happens. Where is the mother root? Where is the beginning and where is the end? So in text 37, it reads, the Supreme Personality of God had said, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. This is the root. When a living entity comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Or in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust as milk in contact with sour tamarind is transformed into yogurt. So we try our best, and we have the real propensity, Prabhupada says, the propensity to love Krishna is there, but there's so many weeds, and it is difficult to find where they start. But here it's describing that this lust is a serious spiritual sinful desire, a sinful desire. A very big weed in our bhakti garden. I remember when I was only 4 years old that somehow or other, my parents, I had friends all around the block, and I had one little boy who was really my closest neighbor, and I was allowed to sleep over at his house. At 4 years old, no big deal. So go over there, and I was so excited because, because it's opposite sex or boy, So it starts even at 4 years old. This is a very deep-rooted, serious root. that is growing within us. And where does it end? There's that story when Prabhupada tells a story about the old man that was dying, and someone, and a person commented that even at time of death, people, they're still attracted to the opposite sex. And so someone said, oh, that couldn't be. He says, well, you just come here with your younger daughter and come here, and you walk in the room and to see this dying man. And so they did, and you see it, you just watch the eyes of the dying man. And sure enough, the eyes went right to the young woman. So the lust begins early age, all the way to the time of death. And that's how deep-rooted it is. So it's a seriously dangerous weed. So we have to know how to get out that weed. We have some volunteers come out. And one time we had a volunteer from the University of Florida, and she was into the soil and, I don't know, earth things. She was from Honduras, and she wanted to go back to her country and help them with their gardening. So she had taken some courses and she volunteered, and I said, well, what do you like to do? And she goes, I like to weed. I said, you like to weed? I said, bless you, may you live long. I said, I've got plenty of things you can weed in my garden. So she did, she actually came many weeks, and she just loved to weed. But sure enough, I first come out there, and she's weeding the wrong things. She's taking out the good plants, and she leaves the weeds. And so we have to be careful to understand that we need proper guidance on finding what are those sinful desires, what are those lustful desires. So therefore, we look to the spiritual master to know how we can identify those properly. And then, like it says in this purport, we can actually begin to turn the lust into love. And that's magic. It's not quickly done, but just by this service, we can turn that propensity that we have in contact with this material world to lust after things. We can turn it into love for Godhead. So this, we find that we even have mistakes while doing devotional service, that we're thinking, oh yes, I love Krishna so much, and I love my drum playing, and I'm so good at this, and I can dress the deities like anything, and lust is still in there. The intentions are for me and not for the pleasure of the Lord. So we have to be very careful. It's very subtle. That's why we need proper association and constant hearing of how this pride is the source also of this lust. Wanting glory. Glory for myself. Name, fame, glory, the same old story. So this is very important, that we have the proper intention. Otherwise, we feed the ego and just put more fuel on the fire, even within devotional service. So sometimes it can be very, a little bit cloudy. So how to get the weeds? Well, in our gardens, we've tried everything. We've tried cardboard. You put 2-3 layers of cardboard out there and you try to smother it, right? You try to just kill those darn weeds with that cardboard. And it makes a good use of the cardboard. And that's sometimes can be artificial, how to get rid of your lust. It reminds me of in one temple I was at, we had one brahmachar who just didn't want to look at women. He didn't want to be agitated, so he wouldn't look at women. But it was a very small temple, and we had a little small stairway going up, and we'd have to pass by the stairway sometimes. And he literally would run into the wall and smash into the wall, trying not to look at the opposite sex. And it was just like, oh my God, it was crazy. So it doesn't really work that way. You can't just smother those desires that have been there so long. Huh? And then there's the opposite also. Rajneesh in Portland, he says, yeah, put the fuel on the fire. Just get it all out of your system. Be lusty. And he had so many Rolls Royces and so many wives and so many everything. But did it stop? No. So we can look at text number 39. It describes this. Thus, the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by the eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. It is said in the Manusamhita that lust cannot be satisfied by any amount of sense enjoyment, such as fire is never extinguished by a constant supply of fuel. In the material world, the center of all activities is sex, and thus this material world is called Maitunya Aghara, or shackles of sex life. In the ordinary prison house, criminals are kept within bars. Similarly, the criminals who are disobedient to the laws of the Lord are shackled by sex life. So if you just put more fuel on the fire, then you get more and more bound. It doesn't really work. So there is a history of our eco farm, and it's that where we have it, there's two different places where Vinda Devi's temple is and where we're making a garden. And this used to be the landfill for the devotees. I guess for 30 years they didn't want to go to the landfill, so they just dumped everything over there because no one was ever going to go over there and no one would ever see it. So when I went there, it took me 2 months of digging and digging and digging. Plus they had made a burning fire there, Kawayapani, who was trying to burn everything. And as I was digging, I found relics from, well, anyway, I can make a long list of things. Everywhere from, you know, Indian trunks to roofs to radiators to stoves. And just the other day, I was digging, and I keep thinking I got it all. And I dig in there, I find a stove handle. It's true, don't we? We find still things in there, big pieces of metal and all kinds of things. And so this, I was realizing that this body, especially the subtle body, is a landfill. We have desires in there that have been put in there for thousands and thousands of births. All these subtle desires are just in there. They might not surface all the time, but they are the cause of our degradation and our attraction to sinful activities. So all kinds of things pop up when we don't expect it. I mean, you just be going, minding your own service and your devotional service, and what happens? All of a sudden you experience some desire for some crazy habit that you used to have a long time ago, or some taste that you just can't resist. So what to do with this? First of all, you have to be honest and realize that that yes, we have these very old desires within our consciousness, and even at old age, you know, hormonally the changes, they get you coming and they going. And when you're young and when you're old, they also hit you. So these things can emerge. We can hear a little bit of what Krishna advises us to do about this in text 41. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. The Lord advised Arjuna to regulate the senses from the very beginning so that he could curb the greatest sinful enemy, lust, which destroys the urge for self-realization and specific knowledge of the self. Jnana refers to knowledge of self as distinguished from non-self, or in other words, knowledge that the spirit soul is not the body. So this is the ABCs, and the most important thing to destroy this illusion that we are this body, that we have to fulfill all its desires, no matter what it's telling us to do. Yes, whatever you want, dear body, I will become your servant. Just like the dogs, they follow their noses, they follow, all the animals are following some particular sense that's very strong. But we have a whole pile of strong senses, which makes it even more difficult in human form. But Krishna's advising to become regulated and to fill ourselves with this knowledge of who we really are, which does not get old. It's the oldest knowledge, and it is ever fresh as we read it. And it is said that an idle mind is Maya's workshop, right? So she will enter as soon as there's a little bit of of peace or comfort, thinking, yeah, I'm good, I'm perfect and complete in my Krishna consciousness, immediately she'll come and sweep you away. So one way to avoid that, and one way to really stay fixed in your devotional service, is to take the vows of becoming a devoted disciple to a spiritual master. Then you're locked in. You're locked into agreement that I am going to do whatever Srila Prabhupada says. He knows the best way to free me from these shackles. Keep me busy. We pray to Tulsi Devi, give me that privilege to always be doing some service for Krishna 24/7. And Srila Prabhupada did, and he still is doing it. He's giving us instructions every day. Come to Mangalarti, chant 16 rounds, read my books. These things don't change, even in the COVID-19. If you can't come to Mangalarti here, you can have it at home. So these things are very important, and it's good advice to be able to regulate our senses no matter what's going on. We become fixed, our mind becomes controlled, we become peaceful, and then that lust subsides. It will subside. So there's an environmental protection office that visits us too often, if you ask me, because we have this swamp over here. I don't know why we bought this property with a swamp, but anyway, we have these people coming out, and one day they see these big elephant ears, and they say, this is an invasive species, you have to get rid of them all. So Paddy Bhushan volunteered, and he dug out all these millions of plants, and someone said, do you want them at the eco farm? I said, well, I guess I could chop them up, put them in the compost or something like that. So we did. We chopped off the elephant ears, and then I asked somebody, I said, well, if we chop up the roots, maybe they'll all start again, and then we'll have it be all over the place. So we took the roots to the burning ghat over here. And in a couple weeks, what happens? You can ask over here. They started to grow again. Remember those elephant ears? I said, get rid of those. They're growing again, right? I said, take them to the burning ghat, because they just don't go away. They're invasive. So in the same way, we have invasive sinful desires that just a little bit of bad association, just a little bit, and it will spread. It will invade your whole consciousness. So it's so important. The spiritual master says that give your association and take good association. Don't take bad association. A little bit can go a long way in ruining your little creeper that we're trying to grow in our garden. So many distractions, even this with this virus and everything, so many distractions, and very much of a challenge to keep bad association out. We might have some free time, and then we just want to turn that little Maya on or something like that, or read this book or do some other thing that we know we shouldn't do, that will invade our spiritual consciousness. So there's also a very nice advice by Bhaktivinoda Thakur on maintaining a very Krishna-conscious atmosphere to grow our creepers. He advises that one takes shelter of an ashram. We all fit into some ashram, and we should be honest which ashram we should be in. It's advised that this is like it's like your fertilizer and your weed killer, because you get good association with like-minded devotees. If you're a grihastha, then you can speak about how to raise your children in Krishna consciousness, and you discuss how to maintain. Oh yeah, how do I balance my life? And you help each other that way, and read together and associate together. And then if you're brahmachari life, the lust is, you keep the lust out. Everyone works in that way. There's no more sex life. That is your ashram. And there's that strength that's there if you keep with that association. And same with vanapras now. It's a challenge. Prabhupada said it really should happen at 50, you know, that you should separate and find like-minded people that are serious about advancement, serious about cutting off those relationships, and working forward towards the goal, which is to become more attached to Krishna and to rid yourself of that lust and actually begin to really turn it into love by getting more absorbed. And so you see in many temples that, you know, 50 and older are begging to address the deities and begging to do things in direct contact with the Lord to incite their spiritual senses and to give them that taste, that higher taste and pleasure, which makes you more and more attached. More and more attached so you can just drop the other ideas of sinful activities. And then, of course, there's sannyas, where there's no question that you remain fixed and you're very particular of who you associate with. And then we're very healthy. In a shelter, in a proper shelter, with the proper fertilization and the weeds are killed, then your spiritual life can become very, very healthy and robust. And then you're able to help others. But unless we're really strong, we don't have that strength to help others. So this is one very important advice, is to take advantage of the ashram, find your spot, and really absorb yourself, and try not to mix. When there's a lot of mixing, then the agitation can happen again. So we try to protect each other, just as in a shelter, it's a great protection. Because the senses, they need an engagement, they need a lifestyle, and so you have to choose the proper lifestyle for your senses. And so one must be very honest what that might be. So in text 42, moving right along here, is talking a little bit about these senses. The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. The senses are different outlets for the activities of lust. Lust is reserved within the body, but it is given vent through the senses. Therefore, the senses are superior to the body as a whole. These outlets are not in use when there is the superior consciousness. So we have to be in that superior consciousness, which means we have to be connected to Krishna as much as we possibly can. Whether in the temple or outside the temple, we have to find a proper way to be connected. Otherwise, we'll never escape these shackles. We'll never really get out of this material world. And it's described somewhere in here, I can't remember where I read it, but to escape, one has to be able to handle things very carefully. Maybe some of you in my age remember the movie The Great Escape, and Steve Queen, and how they really organized this whole thing down to the last, you know, how to get out of here, and everyone had their part, and everything was really somewhat successful because they had proper guidance and they really had it down. So if we want to escape, we have to have the guidance of the spiritual master, the proper association, and we do have it. The great acharyas have left us their thoughts, their revelations. They've given us their guidance. They've given us their poems. They've given us songs. They've given us books. They've given us so much that we should take advantage of, especially the books. When you think of that pastime of how Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivasacharya, and they were given that mission to take the Goswami books, I guess, to Bengal or somewhere like that, where they were like so thirsty for this information, so thirsty for spiritual life, and then it was written. It was not an easy affair writing these books and finding the proper way to do it. If you ever go to that little place where they preserve all the books next to the Krishna Balaram temple, if you get permission to go in there, they have the Goswami's books there on little palm leaves, and you can see all the beautiful rows of pearls. It's like really, you can actually see them. And but these were, you know, not easy to carry around these books, but they did. They put them in big trunks and went off to on the first Sankirtan distribution party, and But a king heard that, oh, these saints have got some treasure. Let's go steal it. And they went and stole the treasure, and it ended up to be books. And the king, I think his name was Virambir? Yeah. And he started reading these books and realized, wow, these are gems. If I keep these long enough, maybe the person who wrote them or who lost them will come here, and I can meet such great personalities. And sure enough, Srinivasacharya came back, and the king surrendered to him. And so these books are treasures, but not only just the books in the songs and everything, but also the deity worship Prabhupada has established, these temples that Prabhupada has established. It's a lot of work to keep these temples going, especially now with less people. We realize, it's a lot of work, and they have to keep going. So we should take advantage, because the deities are also so important to make that contact with our eyes and our senses, which are lusting after so many things. Lust after Krishna, lust after the beautiful sight that you get to see here every day, and the prasadam that is a given. So that lust will turn to love to the deities, and you'll become very attached, so that you will want to come to the temple and see them. And your heart will be hankering for the time when there are no restrictions at all. So we keep praying for that privilege to serve and to push Mr. Lust far away. Yeah, Mr. Lust, yeah, to push him far away. So Lord Chaitanya is the master gardener, described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that he knows how to cultivate this love, and he says it begins by hearing and chanting. The process is for everyone. It's for the amateur gardener and for the pros. You can always learn more. And you have to take it very deeply. You have to, it's not like when you're in the garden, you're asked to weed something and you can hear snap. That means you're just snapping the roots off. You're not going and pulling them out. So in the same way, chanting, we don't want just a snappy old sound. We want to really chant our rounds deeply. Really want to hear and the philosophy deeply and take it deeply. And then those creepers have plenty of space to grow. The flowers can bloom, maybe not this lifetime, but the buds will be there. And they might just bloom next lifetime. But we keep the creeper, keep watering the creeper, as Lord Chaitanya suggests. And of course, the offenses, they've got to go. They've got to go out. So it's a gradual process. And so in this last verse, it says, thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, O mighty Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus, by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So it says, one may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, but by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one could be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind, by steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity. So it's a gradual process. It's not overnight that we can weed our garden and have it all clear, but it's a constant endeavor. And we get the steadiness to go out there in the heat and the humidity and everything else. We keep going there by the strength that and determination that this process will work and that will produce this love for Krishna. And it will no longer be lust and be agitating, but it will be soothing to the soul to be able to come here and actually experience some attraction for the Lord and not for those unwanted things that are deeply embedded in with us. And so this is a very scientific process. It makes so much sense. And it does work. And we have so much evidence of that from the previous acharyas. And I think within ourselves we see that we're still here in Krishna consciousness. We're still gardening our creeper, watering it, and are happy doing that. That we soon find out that there's nothing else out there that's really going to make me any happier at all. So maybe someone has some other ideas or questions or doubts or anything. They heard directly from Lord Chaitanya. Their library was in their head. Yeah, Jiva Goswami was writing. Everyone was writing. South India. A lot of it was in their head. I mean, Krishnadas Kaviraj and all them. They were smart. They could remember things, not like us. Yeah. And things were preserved, just like Lord Chaitanya was so happy to find some written thing. Remember when he went down south to the Brahma Samhita and Krishnadas in the, what's the other, Bidalmangal Thakur, his writing also. What's it called? Krishna Karamita. Yeah, so he found those two things. So, yes, some things were definitely written down, but it wasn't easy to write on palm leaves and to haul them around with you and things like that. So you can see where the Bhaktisiddhanta and Prabhupada was so determined to have everything down in print so that we could have them available all the time. So we should be very grateful. I've never heard that. 200 or 500. No, I've never heard that. I guess that would be doing pretty good. I don't know. And it's like the hairy sage that got blessed that he would. For every hair on his body, he would have to wait for Lord Chaitanya's association. He would say, hi, whoa, 200, 500 lifetimes. But I see the potency in this process. It's definitely custom designed for this age, that's for sure. So it's going to be most effective. There's really no other way to get rid of this lust. There really isn't. This is the really only secure method. If there was something else, Prabhupada would have told us, or someone would have told us, or we would have gone looking for it. But we know that this is the real remedy. And it's not just getting rid of lust, but it's actually getting attraction to Krishna. That's the special thing. That we're not just negating, but we're going forward. Just like the Buddhas say, yeah, everything's peaceful. I love everybody. I love it, you know, all this. But they don't even know the supreme lovable object. They're missing out on that whole thing. So we have it all. We have the way to get there.
Yamunacharya didn't have to work hard on controlling his lust because he was tasting.
Right, he could just spit at the thought. Yeah.
I had a question from this morning's class. I asked the question, but it wasn't answered. It said that in the purport, Srila Prabhupada said that the original commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sridhar Swami, said that there is, you know, that the devastation doesn't come after every mani. But then further down it said that Jiva Goswami says it does come after, and so did Vishnu Chakravati Thakur. So how the original commentator, how did they say that was wrong? So in some
technical thing. I remember Jayananda Prabhu he gave class in Portland one time, and I just remember it was about Lord Brahma doing the creation. It was very technical, and he was reading it, and then He closed the book and says, I don't know too much about this technical stuff. He goes, all I know, because it was about his doing tapasya, penance. He goes, all I know about penance is that you go in that shower and there's the hot water and the cold water. And you have to go for the cold water if you want that house too. So I can't answer your question. Right, right.
But still, he
yeah. Tamal Krishna Goswami tells a story when they were both chanting Gayatri at the same time, and he got done like in 2 seconds. And afterwards, he goes, "What was that?" He goes, "I don't know all those words and everything. I just." But our intention to love Krishna should be there. Okay. Parampara preaching. Prabhupada was so expert preacher, fearless, and yet he was constantly warning his followers, I can do this, but you cannot do. Always warning, do not imitate, do not preach beyond realization. Yet he also challenged, do not be afraid to take risks for Krishna, be bold for Krishna. So please kindly expand on this point, important point, to not preach beyond your qualification, but be bold in the service of Mahaprabhu. You give so many nice examples of our acharya's preaching. Please address how ordinary devotee should draw the line. Thank you. I mean, the very first day that I learned about Krishna consciousness, I was put on the street to tell people about Krishna. You know, we were pretty fearless. We just, that's what you do. You, well, I don't know too much, but these books are really, you know, they look far out. And so that's our whole mood. We've taken up that fearless mood of Prabhupada by going out there and preaching, although we're not qualified. But we try to keep it at our realization. So it's a combination of both. Fearless, but do it at your level. I remember one time I tried to approach some scientist. We went to some fair. It was about, I don't know, something about the universe, how it's all put together. And I thought, oh, yeah, I made a fool of myself, you know, because it was not where I should go. So I can preach, even though I don't understand everything, to certain people, but not, there's a point when you can make a fool of yourself. So you have to just be very sensitive to your own limitations, that's all. But we shouldn't limit ourselves by being, you know, scared to go out there and tell somebody that you're not your body or anything like that. So in our line, it seems equally important to have written proof and the proof of realizations, Krishna's enlightenment within the heart. In the current atmosphere, we have videos and photographs. If there's no video, there's no incontrovertible truth that such and such happened. I don't quite understand if there's no video.
Oh.
I don't know. You can come here and have live association with Krishna right here. You don't need a video. You can have live darshan right here. You know, you can listen to Prabhupada. This is good. He said that hearing is good as seeing. That I haven't seen San Francisco, but he said my geology friend Ramatitha has gone there, and he's going to tell me what it's like, so I'll know how to, when I go, what I need. So just by hearing, I'm seeing what San Francisco is looking like. So, yeah, that's all we need. We don't need a video. We have our books, and we have our temples, and we have each other for realization. So we're definitely not going to make up something. Although we have our dramas, that's as good as video. Our dramas are fantastic. We need more of them. Yeah, I've done that before. I hear one thing in class, and I think I'm going to use this sometime in my at the campus. And I do, and then that sticks with me for a long time. I mean, you might have to adjust a little bit, but the point You know, even exactly the same words are really good to just use the exact same words and see the reaction of the people. Yeah. Hearing, chanting, hearing, chanting, hearing, repetition. And then it, Hare Krishna, nice to see you. So yeah. Yeah, definitely. So this is the perfect process. So the more we should hear as much as we possibly can. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai.